Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. First, there were service dogs, and everybody understood that. Highly trained animals, fully certified, helping, let's say, the blind. Now we have emotional support animals brought along anywhere, everywhere, to calm and comfort. And that's great, but the lines are getting fuzzy. Sometimes it's turning into a pets on a plane situation, and not just dogs. This hour On Point, dogs, cats, ducks, pigs, snakes. We're talking about the proliferation of emotional support animals. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you use one? Have you found one as your neighbor on a plane? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Asheville, North Carolina, is Hal Herzog, columnist for Psychology Today, who writes the Animals and Us column, focuses on the psychology of human-animal interactions. He's also professor emeritus of psychology at West Carolina University. Hal, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here, Tom.
Can you walk us through some distinctions here, the old-fashioned service dog, and how, or is it, or how is it different from the emotional support animal?
Okay, that's a great question. Service dogs, people think of them as guide dogs, for example. These were the first service dogs, guide dogs for the blind, and then they expanded to hearing dogs that would help people, for example, with deaf to know that the phone was ringing or that the fire alarm was on, smoke alarm was on at their house. And increasingly, it's being expanded so that we now have psychiatric service dogs. But what distinguishes a service dog is it has to be trained to do a specific task. For example, guide you through the streets. If it's a person that's got an anxiety attack, sort of get them away from a social situation that might produce anxiety. An emotional support animal, on the other hand, does not have to be trained. And it basically has to provide emotional support. And the problem with that is that if you ask most pet owners if their dog provides them with emotional support or their pet provides them with emotional support, they'll say, yeah. So the question is, what makes it, if every pet is an emotional support animal, what sorts of legal status do special emotional support animals have?
Well, what law pertains here, Hal? Because we see airlines and hotels and restaurants and grocery stores being fairly open to accommodating emotional support animals, as far as I can see. So are they required to under law? How does the law come into this?
Okay, this is where things get complicated. There's actually three sets of federal laws. One is the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is governed by the Justice Department. That concerns access to public places, for example, restaurants or train stations or museums or hospitals. They only recognize service animals. On the other hand, the Air Carrier Access Act is maintained by the Department of Transportation, and they recognize both service animals and emotional support animals. And then finally, there's the Fair Housing Act, which is administered by HUD, which is access to, let's say, for example, no pets apartments or condos and things like that. And they also recognize both emotional support animals and service animals. So you have these three different federal regulations, and they have sometimes conflicting rules.
So if I show up at the gate to board an airplane with my dog, do they just wave me right on, or do I have to show something? How's it work?
Okay, now let's say if you want to bring your dog on as an emotional support animal, you've got to run through some hoops. And the first hoop is that you have to have a letter from a quote licensed mental health professional or physician saying that you have a recognized psychiatric disorder and that you need the animal to be with you on the plane or to, hang out with you when you're at you're at your destination. So you've got to have that letter. You've got to give that letter. You got to provide a copy of that letter to the airline 48 hours in advance.
Okay.
And that will entitle you. Now, the other thing is the animal has to fit certain requirements, and here the airlines have some leeway. And so, for example, American Airlines says the animal has to fit underneath it has to be small enough to fit underneath your seat or to sit in your lap.
Okay.
The other thing about emotional support animals in the Air Carrier Access Act is you are quite correct. It doesn't just apply to dogs. Service animals have to be either dogs, believe it or not, or miniature horses.
Under the law. Oh, right. I don't know how that got in there, but hello, little
I
horse.
I do. I would love to know, but I recently looked this up, and the horse has to be under 32 inches at the shoulder and weigh less than 100 pounds, but I would love to know how that got in there. On the other hand, emotional support animals can be any animal. It could be a tarantula. It could be a snake. It can be a cat. Go ahead.
We'll hear that people are exercising that. What'd your friend see or have?
What my friend saw was a duck. A duck named Daniel. He took a picture of a duck named Daniel, and it went viral. The duck had a diaper on to keep from messing the plane up, but it waddled up and down the aisles during the flight, and much to everyone's amusement.
An emotional support duck. I mean, and then you say people need a letter from a licensed mental health person, but I mean, those can be. I'm looking at a place here online called not Doctor but Dogter. And they openly advertise themselves as making rental living pet friendly. So I guess if you're in a no pet apartment, but you get one of these letters, maybe your pet can live with you anyway. $149, and you've got a letter that lets you travel with your pet for 1 year. And I want to play for you, if I may, Hal, their ad, which is just puts it kind of right up front. I mean, maybe it's about emotional support, but it sounds most of all, like getting around no pet policy here. I don't know. You be the judge. This ad explains how the site helps people register their pets as emotional support animals.
Are you a pet owner struggling to find a place to live due to no pet policies? Or maybe you live in a place with a no pet policy, but you still want or need a pet? Well, the Dog Tour is in the building. The Dog Tour is a licensed physician who can write a professional note to your landlords or property managers prescribing you an emotional support animal, your dog, for your qualifying condition.
Oh boy, and off we go. And I guess it wouldn't have to be a dog. Here, Carla Fitzgerald, she has an emotional support duck, Hal, you mentioned, named Daniel. This went viral after a passenger took a photo of the duck boarding a plane. Carla told Inside Edition in October she needs Daniel to help her cope with PTSD, which is why she travels with him.
It's necessary for Daniel to be with me in anything I get into, particularly cars. Anytime I'm traveling anywhere, Daniel has to be with me.
Daniel, the duck. And here's Jody Smalley with an emotional support, wait for it, turkey named Easter. This is on a flight from Seattle to San Francisco. Told Inside Edition last year that she needed the turkey because of the difficult nature of the trip.
We're going to San Francisco to go spread some of my husband's ashes. So she's been there for me through all sorts of different things.
Okay. All kinds of situations, all kinds of comforts out there. Hal Herzog, please stand by in Asheville, North Carolina. Stephanie DeSimone joins us right now from Plymouth, New Hampshire. She's a student at Plymouth State University, has an emotional support dog named Flo to help her with anxiety and depression. Stephanie, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
How does Flo help, Stephanie? Describe it to us.
So Flo, she's just so funny. She has such a great attitude about everything. And I think one thing for me that has been huge is just her constant happiness. And I mostly suffer from anxiety, but it will manifest itself into depression. And one of the reasons like that it does to me is it keeps me in my bed all the time. So with Flo, I have an obligation basically to constantly move and constantly get out of bed and do things for her and take care of her. So that definitely has given me a routine and really helped me kind of really function well, I guess, in a normal kind of setting.
Help us visualize Flo. What kind of dog is Flo, Stephanie?
So Flo is actually a German Shepherd poodle mix. So it's a little bit of a different breed. They're a newer breed. Well, I guess.
What do you really call it? Is there a word for that? Like Labradoodle
or a Shepadoodle.
Shepadoodle. Okay.
Yeah, Shepadoodle. So it's actually kind of like a newer version of the Golden Doodle, I guess, or like a different version.
That's not a little dog. Does that go on a plane with you, Stephanie?
Yeah, so it depends. Some airlines allow bigger dogs. My oldest sister, she actually has a golden doodle, and her golden doodle is around 60 pounds, and she flies with her golden doodle. So with Flo, she's projected to be around the same weight. So yeah, there are airlines that will allow me to fly with her. But honestly, out of everything, that's probably one of my like minor concerns.
Yeah.
My biggest concern with how she functions with me is just like in everyday life and how I feel. Like routine is just very good for my mental health. And so I've realized that with my physicians and my doctors and my therapists and stuff. And so that's the biggest thing that she's brought for me, for sure.
Dogs live a long time. Do you anticipate that at some point she may be with you at, you know, at the airport or, I don't know, the hotel or restaurant?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely. And I've been really trying to prepare her for that in her, you know, because right now she's only 5 months. So, like, I wouldn't bring her on a flight now because I don't think she's ready for that. But I would, and, you know, maybe in the next year, eventually when she's calmed down a bit and not so crazy and puppy and it's just more relaxed in a public setting. Like right now, she just loves everyone and she wants to be with everyone and hang out with everyone. And so the biggest thing is just working on her focus. So, and in a setting like an airport, you know, you have to be like appropriate, especially if I'm going to have the dog, the size of the dog that I have with me.
And that puppy's going to grow. What about people who may end up sitting with you next to you on the airplane who are like, oh, you know, gosh, I'm not sure I want to sit next to Flo.
Yeah, of course. So that always is a concern, especially with my oldest sister. And so one of the things is usually when she flies with her dog, it's with her husband. So that usually solves that issue. They'll get like, you know, the two-seater and she'll sit on the inside. But one thing that does help is you actually have to contact the airline in advance. And if they do that so that they actually put you in the bulkhead seat also. So you get the first seat with a lot of space in front of you. And then usually you're kind of like tucked into the corner with the dog. They kind of like put you
got
a little bit like out of the way.
All kinds of nice accommodations there. Stephanie, I know we have to let you go, but I'm really grateful to you. And I hope you and Flo have good travels wherever you may
so
go.
Much.
Stephanie DeSimone with a German Shepherd Poodle emotional support animal. That's what we're looking at. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Mr. Dog, I'm gonna hit you on the top of your head. The back dog's gonna miss you and you'll wish that you were dead. If you don't leave my kitten alone. Yes, I love my little kitten like you hound dog love your bone.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the proliferation of emotional support animals on planes, in grocery stores, restaurants, in life. Emotional support dogs, cats, pigs, ducks, snake, turkey. Hal Herzog is with us. He's a columnist for Psychology Today, writes their Animals and Us column. Aubrey Fine joins us in just a moment, clinical psychologist from California. Take a listen here. I mean, on the one hand, you know, sympathy. April last year, a flight attendant told U.S. Army veteran Jay Fowler she could not get on a flight with her emotional support dog because it wasn't a true service animal. The Army vet told WFLA, Houston's NBC affiliate, what happened.
She was saying, well, an emotional support animal isn't a service animal. A service animal is for someone with real disabilities. And I felt insulted because there are veterans in the world that they have disabilities you can't see.
But, of course, on the plane, well, you've got different kinds of reactions there as well. Here's Eric Goldman, frequent flyer, telling CBS Los Angeles last month about the emotional support animals he's seen on flights.
The emotional support animals are whimpering on the plane, barking at the flight attendants, barking at the seatmates, growling.
And here's Sarah Nelson, International President of the Association of Flight Attendants, talking with CBS Los Angeles about pets who are passed off as emotional support animals because they sometimes cause safety problems for flyers.
Animals who have gotten loose in the cabin, flight attendants are trying to chase them around the cabin to get a hold of them. So this can create a lot of problems that can lead to people getting hurt on board.
You can join us this hour. Do you have an emotional support animal? Why? What's it do for you? Have you seen more emotional support animals around? Like what and where? And what do you think of the proliferation? Is this a sign that we're more humanely open to the healing, comforting power of animals? Is this, for some people, just a back door to take your pet everywhere, to dodge the pet charge in your apartment building or on planes? Hal Herzog here from Asheville, North Carolina, and also right now Aubrey Fine, clinical psychologist specializing in animal-assisted therapy, has given presentations on the difference between therapy, service, and emotional support animals. Professor of Education at California State Polytech Institute in Pomona, California, teaches, of course, there on animal-human bonding. Aubrey Fine, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for inviting me, Tom.
Does it work? Is there a scientific literature that says emotional support animals produce important, good outcomes for their owners, I guess?
Well, that's sort of a very broad question. There's research that really demonstrates that the human-animal bond is very, very compelling and has many physiological, psychological benefits to individuals. And what science has been doing since the late 70s is demonstrating what people have intuitively have felt, that animals are good for our well-being. That being said, you know, there's a lot of research that suggests that animals in general, for some people, provide a degree of social support. In regards to actual research on social support animals itself, that part of the literature is less detailed. And I think that the challenges that I was listening to just a moment ago while you were playing some of those interviews is really some of the difficulties is that as we have seen society change over the last little while, public policy hasn't really been clear on what exactly we clarify as being a emotional support animal, and what ends up happening is, as you heard, there are people that are taking advantage of saying that their animal is an emotional support animal when, in fact, they're doing it for different reasons, and the animals aren't as well-trained.
Does the species of animal make a difference in terms of the comfort that it brings? I mean, you know, we are literally hearing here about comfort ducks and comfort turkeys and comfort snakes.
Right. I've heard that. I think, again, if we can go back, I can use a Baskin-Robbins analogy, different flavors for different people, different choices. The reality is when we're talking about connecting with a species of animals, not under the rubric of what we call emotional support animals, just companion animals together, we find that many, many people find solace in relationships with various animals and develop a connection. You know, one of the theoretical orientations to why people have pets in general is animals act as a social support, not in the context of what we're talking about, but animals just act as a social support. You see little children sometimes when they're having bad times, who do they turn to? They can turn to their dog, their cat.
Yeah, we get that, but this is different because people here are asking to sort of break the regular norms to have constant companionship.
Correct. And the real challenge has been that when the laws of fair housing and the Air Carrier Act were passed, they weren't very, very clear on exactly how we identify animals specifically to serve in that purpose. And that is part of the major challenge, is that we don't really have clarification on what animals should be considered emotional support animals. But in reality, you know, people have found benefits in relating with their animals. The difficulty has been what animals should be considered emotional support animals and how can we keep everybody safe? Because as you were talking about, again, just when listening, you know, on planes, sometimes you look at some of the animals and you wonder about their training and their behavior.
Here's that clip. This is from 2015. This is Lisa Leffelholtz. She was at a Mexican restaurant in Nixa, Missouri. Saw a couple eating at their table. They had a snake. And she complained to the manager, who allowed the couple to stay because the owner said it was a service animal. Lisa approached the couple. She told KYTV in Springfield, Missouri about the experience.
He said, no, it's my service animal, and I'm allowed to have it because it helps me with my depression. So I said, well, I'm very sorry about that, but a snake in a restaurant probably is not the best thing. And he said, well, it's no different than having a dog service animal sitting here. And I said, well, a little bit it is.
Okay, Hal Herzog, the proliferation of species involved in this is novel and very curious, of course, to all of us. There was a joke about a emotional support llama or alpaca or whatever a couple years back. Somebody took one into claiming that they had
Amtrak.
Amtrak. Okay, great. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, let me clarify something here, and okay. Arby, let me know if I'm wrong about this. Stephanie and Flo, for example, Flo's an emotional support animal. They're covered under two federal acts, Air Carrier Access Act and the Fair Housing Act. They're not covered under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So the law does not – they're not service animals. They're emotional support animals, and that means you do not have the right to take them into – you do not have the right to take emotional support animals into restaurants.
Do restaurants know that? Because there's an awful lot of accommodations.
No, they don't know that. And one of the things you can get, you know, on these fly-by-night internet things that you can get an angry-sounding legal letter saying that your animal's entitled to go into this thing. So public access applies to service animals, which are just dogs and miniature horses. So for example, I get calls from colleges every now and then.
Yeah.
Barbara, you may get the same sort of deal, and they want to know what to do because let's say you have a support dog, an emotional support dog. That dog would have legal access to the dorm because that's covered under a Fair Housing Act. But it's sort of unclear, and I don't think the dog would necessarily, because it's unless it's trained as a service dog, not an emotional support dog, which doesn't require training. I do not think it would be necessarily entitled to be in the classroom.
But we have people claiming that they have this right all over the place to get. And some have been in a very straightforward way to get around rules. I want to hear from our listeners, if I may. Leah in New Orleans. Leah, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have an emotional support error named Nero. He's a cat. He's a little cat, black and white.
Okay.
And I had actually brought him to school with me for one semester before I knew that I had to get it passed to the disability offices at my school. I wasn't aware of that.
Okay.
So I had gotten it approved. It was recommended to me through my therapist, so I began taking him to class, got it approved with my teachers, and he was great with it. You know, he walks on a leash. I bring him to the festivals with me. I'll bring him to gatherings with me because I don't do very well around lots of people due to my anxiety. And I also suffer from something called vasovagal syncope that causes me to pass out from my anxiety, which can be pretty scary to happen.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So that was pretty important to me to be able to bring him at school with me, because prior to that, the school I had gone to before, I ended up leaving after just a semester due to my anxiety and not being able to handle it on my own. So I came back home to a school close to home, and that wasn't enough for me either, so I worked to bring my emotional support animal. But then when I found out I had to get it approved to the disability offices, I was quick to do that, had gone to my doctor, got the letters written up, multiple letters written up, actually, and had continually tried to get it approved through my school to bring him to classes with me. And they had told me no over and over again. I couldn't bring him with me, which I think one of the issues with emotional support animals right now is that so many people misuse it, that the people who actually have real need for it aren't able to use them.
That's interesting. On both counts, let me hold that question of misuse. Leah, I appreciate your call from New Orleans. Mike in Omaha, Nebraska. Mike, you're on.
Hey, Tom, great show.
Great. What do you see?
Well, you know, I can say this. I've got a relative who has an animal for emotional support. I get the concept. I'm sympathetic to it. But I see it abused all the time. And let's face it, dogs are very well suited for it. I get that. in your house, you can have whatever you want. If you want a T-Rex in your house, have a T-Rex. But when you go out in public, you have to think about other people as well. As far as I'm concerned, ducks, turkeys, chickens, they belong on plates or in the zoo. They don't belong on planes. They don't belong out in public.
Do you see, right? But is this really a problem, Mike?
Yes, it is, okay? I was flying through Miami. I'm in the passenger area. There's a woman there with a pit bull. A freaking pit bull. As far as I'm concerned, if it doesn't fit in a Ziploc bag, it don't belong on a plane and out in public. But you know what? I think I'm going to get myself an emotional support grizzly bear and see how far we can carry this farce. Because it's narcissism, and it's selfish, and it's ludicrous.
Well,
have a great day.
Okay, Mike, I really appreciate your call. T-Rex at home if you want it. Mike's going to get himself an emotional support grizzly bear. Other callers saying, look, I use it. I need it. We're looking at it. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. One more, and I'll bring it to you, Hal and Aubrey James in Charlotte, Vermont. James, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'll preface my comments by saying dog owner, dog lover, and as from a couple of callers ago, clear examples of how it can be very important for someone's mental well-being.
Yeah.
That being said, I'm a landlord, and I deal with tenants with both service animals and emotional support animals, and I have found a very large increase in the amount of people using the support animal card so that they can have dogs in communities and houses where we don't allow dogs. We had one example of a young lady who had a pit bull and had a note from the doctor saying that this is an emotional support animal. But with dangerous breeds, we took it very seriously. We went to the physician and said, okay, will you sign off on that? This particular animal is the only one that will help. And they would not, and the animal did have to be removed. And so I am kind of curious, maybe I'll ask your guest the legal remedies that that a landlord, for example, would have against somebody that might be taking advantage of the system, and I'll take my answer off the air.
James, I appreciate your call. Hal, is this a widespread problem? Are people abusing this when it comes to landlord situations and others? And what about, this landlord's legal options?
Well, there's definitely a huge problem with abuse. There's no question about that.
A few bucks, you can have that card, and you can say, I'm going to have my pet, whatever the policy.
Yeah, I wanted to see if I qualified as being mentally unstable enough to warrant one, and so I took a 7-item test to get my cat, see if I could get my cat certified as an emotional support cat, and she's not very emotional support. She's not a cuddly cat.
Okay.
And it had 7 questions. One of the questions: are you ever nervous in front of crowds? Well, and everybody's nervous in front of crowds sometimes. So I was told I could pass the test, and then I could go on.
Was this one of these kind of fly-by-night online, get your card here things? Yeah, okay.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's rife for abuse. Now, the question about the pit bull is interesting, it's very clear that in a case where an animal is dangerous or anything like that, or poses a behavioral problem, they can get the boot. The landlord can clearly kick them out.
But what about a tenant is just trying to have a pet when there's a no pet policy?
Well, that's in that case the law is clear that the person has a right to have a pet if they can get a letter from a licensed mental health professional or doctor. The problem is this. I talk to tons of people, as does Audrey about their animals. And if you say, do you get emotional support from your pet? Everybody says they get emotional support from their pet. Of course you do. And so the question is, where do you draw the line? And for example, I've got a friend that's a therapist, and she gets requests. She gets requests for this all the time, and she's reluctant to do it. And she says, in some ways, this can be enabling to a person. They can have their disorder treated. They can have their anxiety treated, and they're going to have their anxiety, their depression treated, and go through treatment process, and might help them. And they wouldn't need the animal as a crutch. So in some ways, it puts the therapist in a difficult and sometimes adversarial relationship with their client when they request these letters. So that's another sort of issue. And Arby's,
but I guess if somebody asked their therapist for the emotional support letter. A pet letter or an animal letter, and the therapist doesn't give it to them, there's always another therapist.
There's always another therapist. Definitely they can do it, and they can get one of those online very, very easily, no question about it.
Aubrey, have we proliferated beyond the zone of real utility and importance here?
Well, I think that what you're talking about is very accurate. I believe that what has happened is that we've gone to a place where there is tremendous fraud. And I don't like the word regulation, but I think even in listening to some of your listeners, what we have to respect is the integrity that animals really are valuable to people, but not every animal is an emotional support animal. And one shouldn't abuse certifying or registering an animal as an emotional support just to get an animal on a plane and an animal in a housing area. And in fact, Hal was correct. It's primarily emotional support animals are truly only covered legally, I believe, in housing and on aircraft.
Aubrey, hold the thought right there. We'll come right back to it. Aubrey Fine, with us from Claremont, California. Hal Herzog in Asheville, North Carolina. We're talking about emotional support animals. Is this a good trend? Is this an exploited loophole? Here's Cat Stevens.
I love my dog as much as I love you. You make things my dog will always come through.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the proliferation of emotional support animals on planes, in grocery stores, restaurants, in life. Emotional support dogs, cats, pigs, duck, snake, turkey, and right on down. With us this hour, Hal Herzog. He writes the Animals and Us column for Psychology Today. He joins us from Asheville, North Carolina. Aubrey Fine is here from Claremont, California, clinical psychologist specializing in animal-assisted therapy. You can join us, therapists. Do you buy this as effective, important? Are you signing off on emotional support animal papers? And for everybody, is this a good trend? Is this an exploited loophole? Both flight attendants, restaurateurs? How's this working? How far does this go? Lots of response online. Aaron says, hey, anybody who works in this field can tell you numerous stories about the transformative power of people with disabilities experiencing dramatic improvement working with horses. Okay, so there's horses. Lisa says, removing emotional support animal regulations, or I guess access, because some people abuse them is like removing handicap parking because some people abuse it. But we've got all kinds of responses here. Andrew says, hey, what about people with allergies? I'm extremely allergic to cats. Andrew's concerned about the animals, says people who need medication or therapy or whatever shouldn't use a living thing as a crutch. Seems selfish and irresponsible. John writes to us, this topic is a big reminder of why I hate liberals. As a business owner, I have a lot of these snowflake cupcake generation brats bringing their pets into my place of trade under the guise that their pets were service animals. At the same time, I had the Department of Occupational Health telling me no dogs allowed. It caused me to spend many hours researching the law and defending the actions of my employees. It gets complicated out there. Jackie in Norfolk, Virginia. Jackie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, and Tom, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm one of those persons, I have an extreme phobia. I am terrified of dogs.
Okay.
I cannot be near a dog.
Okay.
I appreciate the service that dogs do provide.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they are really good. But I have to look at myself because I suffer the same types of, I guess, reactions that you would use a dog for. You know, if I'm around a dog.
Yeah.
I
so if you get on a plane and a dog is getting on behind you, how do you feel?
Do it. I couldn't do it. I would pass out. That's how bad my phobia is. I just couldn't. I had an experience a few years ago where a woman in front of me had her dog, but the dog was small. She had the dog contained, and I was fine. I wasn't extremely comfortable, not as comfortable as she, obviously, but I was comfortable. But I heard a listener earlier, I think they have a dog they're rearing that maybe it's a mixed-breed German Shepherd. If a dog that size was even in front of me, I would probably freak out. So, you know, I do appreciate the need for them, but I do have a problem with, and I see it too, of people abusing the idea of a therapy dog.
Jackie, I really appreciate your call there from Virginia. Aubrey in California, you're the therapist. Here's Jackie. She's got a real, you can hear it, deep-seated dog phobia. How's she supposed to deal?
And that becomes the complexity that we've just alluded to. The fact is that for some people, the benefits of having animals support them, and they really need it. We were really looking at emotional support animals and not talking about fraud, and we were looking at, you know, guidelines that clearly identified what was expected from these animals. See, there's so many loose ends that are not clear that has actually caused the problem. On the other hand, you know, how do we deal with people that have allergies, and how do we deal with people that have phobias of animals? And again, as a person that loves animals, I also do respect the fact that how do we change, as I said, the landscape of policy that looks at this concern? And I think when this began, perhaps there was good natured thought about why people could benefit from emotional support animals. And the logic of this, what has transpired, as Hal has alluded to and some of your listeners have alluded to, is that it has been taken advantage of. And we need to look at both sides of that coin. So for a person that has real anxiety when a dog is near them on the plane, how do we protect their concerns? If a person has allergies, that's going to be a lot more complicated, especially on a plane, because of the short, a smaller environment to begin with. But I think when you're looking at from a therapist standpoint, one should not liberally dispense what, if you're calling it prescriptions, recognizing the magnitude of these decisions, because the reality is, for some people, having an animal in their life really does promote a better way of life for them. And I agree with that. On the other hand, what frustrates me, too, is when I'm on planes and people even look at me and say, geez, I didn't want to pay the money to have my dog under the plane. And therefore, I just went online, as Hal said, and got a certificate that said I could benefit from an emotional support animal.
And right now, Hal, it's pretty much just that simple. I was talking with a friend today whose son was going on vacation, couldn't figure out what to do with the dog, just got the papers and took the dog along. And the airplane and the hotel, they just deal with it. Honestly, privately, he's not saying it's an emotional support animal. It's his dog. Alicia, Milledgeville, Georgia. Alicia, what do you see? You're on the air.
Well, we are an RV park, a very pet-friendly RV park, and we do allow in our clubhouse and bathrooms and laundry room
therapy dogs.
We do have some people that, like the other caller was saying, pass their pets for therapy dogs. How can we deal with that?
Alicia, it's pretty hard to make out your phone line, but you've got an RV park, and you don't allow pets in bathrooms or laundry or clubhouse, I think I heard there. But you've got people claiming that these are support dogs and bringing them in. Hal Hirsuk, are you there? What should Alicia do?
What she should do, number one, is she should make sure that they have a letter from a licensed mental health professional saying that this animal is actually serving this purpose.
But we know you can get those online. They're advertising them for 99 cents. I think it ends up costing more.
But those, like it or not, those letters do convey legal status. So that's the problem, is that there's not much she can do if they can get that letter. Now, if the dog is actually creating a public problem, if it's barking all night and things like that, then she has some legal recourse. But it's going to be a pain for her because she might have to get a lawyer, and she's going to have to deal with the Fed. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's really the problem. Let me mention one other mm-hmm. thing is, and Aubrey and I have discussed this before. I think that the public has an overrated view of how much we know about the effectiveness of a lot of these things, including things like emotional support animals. Well, for example, there is no evidence that an emotional support turkey or duck is going to help people with PTSD. I mean, I can just say that right out with great confidence.
But it's very bold of you.
Is it? I'm Yeah, but it's true. And what happens is that the media likes good animal stories, feel good animal stories, and so what we actually know about animals as therapists, we know that they can be good in some contexts. But the evidence is not nearly as good as the public thinks because of the proliferation of I think biased news stories. Huh. Like you don't hear about the studies which show that, for example, pet owners are worse off than non-pet owners.
Okay.
You don't hear about
this. Right.
For example, you don't hear anything about the very good meta-analysis of a horse therapy in which they concluded that there was no evidence that horse therapy actually worked. So there's a lot of public misunderstanding about what we actually know about these things.
Wow. Melinda in Nashville, Tennessee. Melinda, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes. What do you know?
Well, as a parent of two children, both have OCD and Asperger's,
okay,
I understand completely the value of an emotional support pet. Our dog is registered as an emotional support pet. We didn't need a letter from a therapist. All we did was go online and pay $25 to get a little piece of paper. But I'm
voila,
a responsible pet owner and a responsible parent.
Okay.
And I was saying earlier, you know, it's really simple for someone. I think the biggest concern is dogs. You know, if my older child has a sugar glider in a pouch and takes it everywhere because it makes her feel better, no one's going to care. But in the case of dogs, there's a simple training and test that can be done. It's called the CGC, Canine Good Citizen. And that guarantees that your dog knows how to behave in crowds and out in public and around people.
Well, it's a training course or something.
Yeah, there's training for it, but it's simple and it's inexpensive. You can get it done at any local pet store or local trainer. It takes just a matter of weeks. And if your dog can pass, then you get a certificate.
I mean, it doesn't say your dog's a therapist. It just says your dog has got some training in how to be well-behaved.
Exactly.
Right.
And I think that if someone is going to register their dog as an emotional support dog, they could at least have their dog trained in canine good citizenship.
Well, what do you think? Your kids, your children, you feel they're benefiting from this. What about then people who go out and do it just so they can have their pet live with them in their apartment or because they can't figure out what kennel to take it to?
Yeah, well, that's a different story. You know, those are people who are taking advantage of the system. But if there was some way for people to be required to have at least a CGC on a dog before registering it as an emotional support dog, then if they're just trying to fake the system, they're not going to bother.
Yeah. Melinda, I wish your children good luck with that and good ease with the dog, and I appreciate your call. We're talking about emotional support animals and their proliferation in our society these days. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's go to Madeira Beach, Florida. Lori's calling. Hi, Lori. You're on the air. What do you know?
Hi, Tom. My husband is a hotel owner here in Florida, and we have a resort, and it's a smaller family-owned business, but people will bring their dogs, and we aren't pet-friendly, and we don't advertise as pet-friendly, but we've had problems with people and their dogs pooping in the beds and just making a huge mess of the hotel room.
That sounds pretty bad. But why do you accept the dogs?
Because if they have that piece of paper, I don't think, I mean, according to my husband, and I haven't read up on it and the legal ramifications, but I don't think we or they are allowed to even ask for any kind of, like, certification of the letter that they can print off the internet.
Do you trust that that letter signifies the serious opinion of a mental health professional?
I don't. But that doesn't mean... I mean, you can't, if my girlfriend does it and she has her dog and she calls her, you know, her pet baby and brings her dog around and I know that that's not a service dog and I know that she brings it to hotels and I don't know. It feels so shady that we would get in trouble for asking for more paperwork and yet the dogs can kind of do whatever they want in our business.
that's pretty wild. Lori, I appreciate your call. There's firsthand experience. One more, Dothan, Alabama. Jonathan's calling. Jonathan, you're on.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think the whole emotional support animal thing is malarkey, if you ask me, and I think it should be just taken away because, you know, if I'm on a plane, if I have an emotional support cat, what if somebody's emotional support dog attacks my emotional support cat? would I hold the airline responsible? Could I sue the airline and say, hey, that happened and you allowed it to happen on your plane, so you should be held responsible so I can sue you and you owe me for defamation of all kinds of support, emotional support.
Yeah, we're getting into all kinds of, we got a dog fight, cat fight going on here on the plane, at least in your mind's eye. I can see complications. I can see abuse of the system. I also see people want it. Malarkey, Hal, is that unfair?
No, malarkey is a bit strong, but on the other hand, these are real issues. I guess a couple things I want to add. One is that there's no government recognized certification system in the United States. There are in some other countries, but they're not. Mm-hmm. There's not in the United States. But the other thing is that we see these sorts of conflicts that are coming out in the calls that you're getting. They're so common when we look at human-animal interactions differently. The roles of animals in our lives. And one of the most fascinating things that I find about studying, I'm sure Aubrey would agree, is that it really brings out the best and worst in people. We see all kind of human foibles and passions and the best and the worst in our behavior when we look at the broad scope of how we think about these animals in our lives. And they just bring out just such incredible windows into human psychology.
One more. Adam in Savannah, Georgia. Adam, you're on the air. Our time is short. What's your story, Adam?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, I'm a veteran with PTSD, and it's been suggested that I get one of these. But you just have to think about, other people, and then also people with legitimate disabilities. The law is written in such a way to protect people. People need to be able to travel. People have to have somewhere to live. So, you don't have to go out to eat and bring your snake or your dog. And to the girl who, wanted to bring her cat to school, and she's trying to get approval for it, how do you expect an employer to let you bring your cat to work every day? You need to learn how to function in society without that, or else you need to be collecting a disability check from the government. That's my opinion.
Adam,
can Aubrey add one thing?
Yes, Aubrey, please. Yes. What do you say to that?
I think I know we're almost out of time. The key issue that in hearing all of this is that sometimes when things are good, some people see them as being too good to be true. And the reality is that for some people, the purpose of the emotional support animal does make sense. The abuse of how they're incorporated, the legislation, the public awareness, the guidelines of what people should be looking at. For example, when this began, I think we need to look at animals that do have socialized behaviors, that they're not intrusive if they're in other people's environments, like a plane or in a housing complex. So, again, I think what's happened over the period of time is that this has grown to becoming such an interesting phenomenon that it's being taken advantage of. One, because of clarification. Who really are these animals? What do we really expect them to provide? Why should people be getting certification for something that they need that's different than having a traditional service animal?
Aubrey, we're out of time right there. I mean, some states, Massachusetts, right, among them, legislators considering a bill, reading from the Boston Globe, that would consider making it a civil offense to misrepresent a pet as a service animal. Maybe clarification is on the way. Aubrey Fine, clinical psychologist in Claremont, California, we're very grateful to you for being with us today. And Hal Herzog, he writes the Animals and Us column for Psychology Today. Hal, thank you as well in Asheville, North Carolina. Fascinating. Off we go. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.